shit show. It's a fucking shit show.
Okay, well, welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. We are the Shit Show, Nate, and I have to say, you really just ripped the Band-Aid off, dude. You threw yourself in. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a fun ride. I think I've been working through some of these things for probably the last 2-3 years with a lot of vigor. And it's sort of like, it just sort of felt easy jumping in with the group that's here and just sort of dealing with things the way that we have. I had sort of primed myself a little bit with a prior group I was in and with a therapist who I was seeing at the time, but it just felt like jumping in with old friends, even though we had known each other for like 2 minutes.
Were you going to ACA meetings?
No, I wasn't. I actually found you through the place I was going before. So I was in Calling Home for a while.
Oh,
and
okay.
Whitney interviewed you, and then I started listening to your podcast from that, and it's sort of like, this makes a whole lot more sense over here than what I was doing. And it's sort of like the voyage you take to get from one place to another is really sort of interesting.
Connecting the dots. Yeah. I don't think I knew that there was a community with Calling Home. What is it specifically focused on?
It is primarily focused on adult children of immature parents.
Okay.
So sort of I approached my evaluations and getting on this voyage by sort of looking at parental immaturity, and that got me so far. And then it's sort of like, but there's more. And that's sort of the voyage I've been on.
So what song do you want played when you walk into a room?
I would probably pick the New Pornographers' Mutiny, I Promise You.
I've never heard of that. What music is that?
It's sort of indie, early 2000s, mid 2000s. The Nico Case is in the band. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's pretty darn great. My wife and I usually listen to sort of weird things that we hear on the completely independent radio stations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's your favorite carb?
Bread, hands down. Usually some kind of whole grain something with a nice robust crust and really, really tasty. I make my own bread a lot. I shouldn't because I don't need to. I eat too much, and then is not something that you need to keep around a lot.
Okay, so what's your favorite cheese?
I'm a cheddar person.
Okay, that's definitely the fave.
There's actually a specific one. There's a place here in Wisconsin where they make a chipotle cheddar that is really, really good. And we can get it at almost any of the independent grocery stores we have around here. So it is a favorite in our house.
What's the dairy farm or what's the company that makes it?
It's called Henning's Cheese.
That means nice. So they're local, obviously.
It's local. Yeah. On a cold winter day, we'll hop in the car, take the dog with us, and make a cheese run. It's about an hour from our house.
Oh, nice. That's great. Okay. And a condiment?
The Minnesotan at heart comes out and it's ketchup.
Okay. Are we doing Heinz?
Heinz. Yeah. All the others are interior.
It's not okay. What did I post?
It's not the same.
Kraft ketchup. I didn't know they did that. The worst is, and you get it at airports, and it's America's something. You know what? It's not even close to ketchup. It's horrible.
It's red substance that is sort of vaguely vinegary.
Yeah. So how did you learn that you were an adult child?
I think it was reading through the laundry list the first time. And it's sort of like, holy crap, there's a lot of stuff here that, you know, resonates and is sort of representative of things that I experienced when I was in some of those formative years.
But so you read it once you heard me on her podcast? Or you had read it before?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
No, I hadn't read it before. I sort of discovered that probably early 2023.
Okay. So then, but I guess you clearly had some sort of other, like, revelation when you joined her group.
Right. And I think the first revelation that I had was realizing that, or I guess coming to terms or accepting that my family was dysfunctional. And then sort of going down that next path of saying, but why? And then going through that process of recognizing that the things that my family could never really meet me where I needed to be. as time had gone on. And maybe this is partly because of, you know, my choice to go in a different direction with my life. Maybe it's partly because they're dealing with their own shit and they don't know how to address what's going on. But it's kind of like what was there wasn't working. And I needed to do things that were there to try to gain some comfort, gain some peace, and sort of get on a healing journey.
What was it, one particular event that really, like you said, that coming, accepting that your family was dysfunctional, was it just like a long kind of slow drip, or was there one event that like did really cement it in for you?
Well, I think it was something that you knew something wasn't right, mm-hmm. but you couldn't quite put your finger on it. You didn't necessarily have a term for it. You didn't have a way of describing it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was sort of getting overwhelmed with things going on at work. It was really, really chaotic one summer. And I was just sort of, I was being a pretty shitty husband to my wife. We had a fight in the car going to Costco. And we got home from that trip. And I said to her that I need to do something about this because this isn't working for you. It's not working for me. This is not how we need to live our lives. And sort of dealing with that was sort of important. And part of it is for probably 20, 25 years, I had August was always a really difficult month for me. It's the month that my dad passed when I was in high school. And I dreaded August. August was always something to sort of grin and bear, get through. And, you know, there's the sort of unprocessed trauma that was there from my parents being split, my dad dying, all the other things that were happening going on really sort of came to the forefront in August of 23 and really needed to do something. Otherwise, I was going to end up not in a good space at home. I was going to sort of run myself ragged. It was just not going to be a good thing.
So paint the picture of your upbringing.
Okay. So this is sort of a lot of complexity. My parents divorced when I was probably 9 or 10. I don't remember exactly when. My dad was at the time, he had taken a job as a truck driver. My mom was taking care of us at home. But, you know, I think there was some marital infidelity on both sides that was happening during that period of time. And I think one of those times came out where dad was spending time with someone else, and he managed to get a DUI with his semi truck and knocked over a mailbox with it. And it's sort of like, what are you doing? This is like three stupid things all at once happening here. And it's sort of like, how does all of this tie together? And then they got divorced, and then my mother started hanging around with her long-term boyfriend that was sort of on again, off again for a really long time. But what was always sort of difficult is we would be at home on the weekends with a sitter. She would be out on the town with her boyfriend and sort of coming home at whatever time made sense. And, you know, we'd be with dad on the other weekends. So mom's doing this all of the time. It's in a small town in the middle of nowhere, so everybody knows what's going on. And there's sort of this, the thing of people talk, people see what's happening. And, you know, that sort of reputational damage happens. And, you know, you start to become a whole lot more guarded about your own self when sort of faced with some of those circumstances.
So you said with the divorce, you're not quite sure what age you were, or do you also not remember when it happened?
I don't remember exactly when it happened. I think it was in third grade, because I do remember, you know, we were fortunate enough that we had a school social worker where I was, and, you know, they kind of had their ear to the ground on what's going on. And, you know, they sort of took us out for group conversations out of class to sort of work through whatever things you might have been feeling. So that was, wow. I think that was sort of a really interesting and progressive thing. But
yeah,
I don't know if anyone does that anymore, or if that's sort of the unique thing that happens in some of the school districts.
Wow.
But I think a lot of kids would really benefit from that kind of
course,
that kind of situation.
Well, yeah, because they talk about the PACEs, which is like the positive childhood experiences. And one of them is like, yeah, having at least one, like, you know, safe adult, you know, in your life can really make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel fortunate that through school that there were people who were able to sort of be the invisible hands in the background. They saw what was happening. They were there and able to recognize that, you know, this situation at home may not be ideal, but we need to make sure that people understand that they can get help, that we're here to support them getting along with their, you know, getting through school, getting through successfully graduating, getting on to whatever happens next, and working through some of those adverse experiences.
That's really amazing. Do you remember what it was like before they got divorced? Like, what was it like in your home and what did their relationship look like?
Well, I think that, you know, my dad with his job of being an over-the-road truck driver, he wasn't around a lot. So, you know, he'd be out for a week, week and a half at a time, come home for 2 days, 3 days, and then would be back out on the road. And I remember there were, you know, things were tight growing up when, or before my parents got divorced. But, you know, I don't remember anything being particularly awkward other than, you know, my mom not happy that dad was gone and my mom having suspicions about dad being not faithful.
How many siblings do you have?
I have a brother, a sister, and a half-brother.
And where are you?
I'm the oldest.
Okay. Well, I guess there's the emotional parentification there.
Right.
As far as, like, her voicing that she was worried that he was being unfaithful.
Yeah, there's that. And then sort of the task-oriented parentification of doing the things that need to be done because there wasn't anyone else to do those sorts of things. And, you know, being sort of the one who gets told, you know, one side of a story, it's not really a place that anyone as a kid should really be.
Exactly. What was your relationship like with your dad?
It was fairly good, but my dad was distant. I think the service in Vietnam and coming back from the war, I think really my aunts have shared stories that, you know, when he came back from Vietnam, he wasn't the same. I think at that time, the sort of macho culture of, you know, dealing with mental health issues and dealing with all of those things that go along with that, dealing with mental health was shameful, and that you were somehow weak by, as a man, by not, you know, not sort of dealing with it yourself in your own way.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think his approach, I felt fairly close to him, but, you know, dad was kind of the person who would be a master manipulator of situations. And, you know, it was always that, it always felt like you were trying to chase after his love and attention, but he would sort of breadcrumb you along the way. And I see that in how my brother interacts with his kids. Mm-hmm. and you know, he and his spouse, or he and their kid's mother, divorced. And, you know, I see so much of what my dad did with us that he's doing with his kids. And it just, you know, I'm not in a position to help or intervene in any way, but it's just, I feel so bad seeing some of those things happen like that and not really being in a place to intervene. And it's kind of like, you know, what is your role to intervene in a situation like that? That's where I sort of get torn at times.
Absolutely. And so then you were obviously hero child?
I would probably say that, yes. You know, looking at some of the parts work things, the manager is really, really sort of oversized role that sort of is there acting as the glue that holds everything together and sort of keeping things moving.
And so then what was the rest of your childhood like? Like, were you a good student? Did you have friends? Did you have any issues?
I really didn't encounter any issues. I was the one who, you know, worked very hard. I was pushed by, you know, the adults in my life who were there to help out with things. But I think the sort of combination of having a dysfunctional family and not having really good financial resources, you know, I tended to sort of keep to myself a lot, and that, you know, lest I draw attention to me for being the poor kid with a shitty family. So it was more sort of like, keep your head down, keep your head out of the fire, do what you need to do to sort of survive and get to the next step. And that, you know, that socialization or going through some of the more relaxed down periods for a really, really long time, finding the opportunity to relax and just be comfortable doing nothing was really, really difficult for me because it was always focused on productivity, moving forward, and not necessarily taking the time to learn those skills and to try to necessarily be as much of a social butterfly as you really could be.
And then did your mom get remarried?
Well, there's a whole lot more of those stories there, Andrea, that she stayed with her longtime boyfriend for a while. And my half-brother was born when I was like 13. And then later on, she got married to another person who wasn't the dad of my half-brother. And then they ended up splitting up while I was in college. So it's sort of like all of these things that are happening in the background, you know, at what level do you just have to say, I'm taking the keys to my car and driving away?
Exactly. So did you feel like you were just counting down the days to like get out of the house?
In some ways, yes. I had the ability to, you know, since we didn't have a lot, college was, you know, there was help to get through college, which was good. But, you know, doing something after high school, doing nothing wasn't an option because there wasn't anything to go back to. There wasn't any support system that was there. So it's kind of like, God, you've just got to put your pants on, put your boots on and go one step at a time to sort of march forward through whatever mud you have to march through to get to the end.
And then what about your siblings? Did they like, was there like a scapegoat or like, how did they fare from this as far as like in their childhoods?
Well, I think my sister was sort of the golden child in some way. She was the youngest for the majority of growing up. And, you know, I think she was the golden child. My brother, I think, was the one who acted out more. And he was 18 months younger than me, and we were really close for a really long time. And then I don't know exactly what happened, but probably 10 years ago, a switch flipped in our relationship. And, you know, the sort of someone being done with you, that, you know, they've made the decision that the relationship has changed, that sort of happened. And I really struggled with that for a long time and ended up seeing a therapist for a while to sort of talk through that grief of sort of losing a relationship while someone's still alive. That was kind of a bit of an opening, you know, cracking the door open just an inch in trying to work through some of these things.
What was it that led to that?
Well, what led to that was, you know, there was a time when my brother was in trouble with the law. And he called me sort of in a panic saying, I don't know what I'm going to do. I feel like I want to kill myself. And I just need $7,000 to go pay for a lawyer to do something. And it's sort of like, well, A, I don't have $7,000 to give you right now. And B, you know, what can I do to help? How are you feeling? What's going on? If you need to contact someone and if you feel intent on harming yourself, call this number. That was before the 988 system was in place, but here are the people that can help you if you feel intent on harming yourself. But I was, you know, looking at this as the outsider, that you sort of see this thing happening in, you know, 1,000 miles away from where you are, and there's nothing you can do to help in that moment. It's like watching someone be at the bottom of an avalanche and the snow starts to slide down the mountain. There's nothing that you can do to get that person out of the way when you're across a mountain ridge.
Yeah, that's got to be really hard. What, 10 years ago, you said?
Probably 6 or 8 years ago that was going down.
And has there been, like, are you just absolutely no contact, like completely estranged or what?
No, I
Okay, shitshow dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shitshow ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shitshow women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
I wouldn't say completely estranged, but you know, the level, I would say it's almost there. Because when you have a conversation, none of the conversations that anyone, him in particular, want to have with me are related to anything useful. It's always, you know, some kind of bragging situation of, I just went to the dealer and bought a new truck. And sort of like, well, how nice for you. Have you paid your child support this month? You know, it's kind of like
delusional. Yeah.
It's delusional in some ways.
Yeah. Mental illness. Sure.
It's really tricky. And, you know, when I look at this, I wouldn't say I'm no contact with my family, but it's sort of a managed contact that it's within the boundaries and the terms that I'm willing to, where I'm willing to meet folks. And I've sort of set a hard boundary around holidays, things like that, because it's a long time to travel over there. It is expensive. It is not enjoyable by any stretch of the imagination. And there's not a family home to go to. So it's kind of like going there is not going home. Where I am right now is home.
Yeah.
So it's kind of this situation of, you know, when you go somewhere and things have changed radically in the 20 some years you've been away, it's just not the same.
Uh-huh. Are they all where you grew up?
My sister moved away, but my mom, brother, and half brother are all in the same place.
Got it. And so then how do you feel like your adult childness unfolded in adulthood?
Well, that is kind of a really tricky question to answer. And I think it sort of unfolded in a way that I think the sort of validation seeking efforts showed up in some ways where, you know, in the workforce and in some of those other things, kind of a people pleasing and not being able to say no to things created some difficulty. And it's kind of a two-edged sword, because not saying no to things was, I think, crucial in building some of the early successes in your career when, you know, you're young, you have a surplus of time, being someone who can gain new opportunities, new experiences. It's awesome from that perspective. But right. Then as you stay on and you continue to do additional things, feeling this sense that you can't say no to something because you're going to let someone down and they're going to be mad at you. You know, I think the last 2 years in particular, I just said no to a lot more things in the last 2 years than I did in the first 17 years that I worked for the company. And nothing has happened. My work life is better. My home life is better. My work life balance is much more where it should be. And nothing really came of it. And I think the other thing that I will sort of piggyback on that would be that sort of going down a little bit of these voyages and sort of treating mental health seriously, I think has made me a better boss. And I think it has created a situation where, you know, having used some of the tools that are available, having an understanding of what our health insurance will pay for, I'm much more attuned to the challenges and problems that I see on people who are on my team. And I feel like I can be a better advocate for them and to help and to be able to have some of those conversations early as opposed to later when there's a crisis.
And then did you struggle in relationships?
Well, I think I didn't really have many relationships. That I think I've had this very strong sense of fear of rejection that really, in some ways, dating was not an option in high school. Dating really didn't happen in college because I was so damn focused on just getting through everything that I needed to get through, taking way more courses than I needed to, being sick all the time, sort of working myself to the bone. And, it created this sort of workaholism and using work and using tasks and achievement as a way to sort of
occupy my
time. Yeah, exactly. Numb things. So that way I didn't really feel much. And, it just didn't quite work the way that it should have or that you'd like it to. That said, I'm where I am right now in life, things are pretty content. I will say that on the relationship side, though, I did, coming out of college, I was set up with someone from, who was a friend of mine, and, they thought that we would be good together. And it was, we ended up staying together for a while from 2003 to 2005. We got married and then that ended. And I think the, some of the traits I talked about in terms of the workaholism and the sort of situation that happened there, I think both of us ended up going down very similar paths where, I was sort of working really hard. I was taking graduate level courses while working full time. And she was teaching at a high school and being very involved in the activities, the extracurricular activities at school. And, I think it was the situation where we just couldn't get on the same page. And, the things sort of drifted apart gradually. And I think it was something that, we both sort of had challenging childhoods. And I think we sort of clung to each other because we thought we could do something. But, you're 22, 23 years old and you haven't figured out what it means to be an adult. And, you go down this path like this. And I harbor no ill will, but I think it's something that, looking back on it, it's kind of like, wait till you're at least 25 before you get married.
I think,
don't sort of rush into anything at 22, 23, get your own stuff together, figure out, what it means to live by yourself first.
Mm-hmm. So what's the most recent insight you've had about yourself and all of this stuff?
I think this year, this is the first holiday season that I've sort of been able to fully relax. Mm-hmm. And that it, being on this planet for 40 some years, to be able to be completely comfortable just sitting on the couch, flipping through a magazine, looking at a book, and not feeling like you have to do something. That my natural coping mechanism was always just get busy and do something. And, first therapist I saw, we talked a little bit about that. And his first comment was, well, you've tried one of the things that I always suggest for people dealing with some sort of complex grief. So let's dig into this a little bit more, because the sort of task-oriented, get your mind off of something wasn't working. And I think dealing with all of these things has been really powerful. But I will say that having a journaling practice that has really come in over the last 3 years, I was originally skeptical. What is this going to do? But sort of getting that physical act of you writing and putting something on paper, it's astonishing what can, the clarity that you have when you just let your mind go where it wants to go. It's really cathartic.
So with you, you had this belief or you were trying to fix your family. Was it hard for you to stop doing those, you know, behaviors? And have you had any like slip ups?
No, not really. And I think part of it, I was always the fixer of things. So, you know, my value was in what I could do, not who I was. And I think that getting through realizing that I'm going to sort of coast a little bit on jumping into to just fix things or to resolve problem, because it sort of fixes the issue in the interim, but it doesn't actually solve the problem long term. And I think I've sort of gradually backed away and have gotten really comfortable with where things are. And, you know, it's one of those things where if I look back over time, the difficulty that I've seen has been sometimes the things that shouldn't be said or things that can't be taken back. That was a really common thing in my household growing up. And I think my mom was the one who was sort of the queen of doing some of those things. And it is really a really difficult, some of the comments that she made 25 years ago, you know, you can't unforget those things or you can't unremember those things.
Have you talked to her about all of this?
That I had a very long conversation with my therapist on this when we were first digging deep into some of these topics. And his comment to me was, what do you hope to achieve with this conversation?
Yep.
And I think that was a, you know, the sort of willingness and ability to accept a difficult conversation like that. I think we looked at it from the perspective of that conversation might be useful for me, but it's not going to change anything because the ability to see someone else's perspective
exactly
doesn't really come out. And you know, I think part of that is looking at the emotional maturity of your parent in that circumstance. And
yep,
you know, when we were going back in time to 2000 in the days before the first wedding, you know, I shouldn't even say before the first wedding, when we were dating and we were getting ready to move to where we were going to go after college, you know, it should never come out that your mother comes to your dating partner and say, you're tearing apart the family by bringing him with you over to wherever you're going to end up moving.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of like, well, what do you think whose side do you think I'm going to take in this circumstance? Am I really going to say, no, I agree with you. I'm going to end this relationship and dump my girlfriend and realize that, oh, I should just move back here because that's what you want. That just doesn't work. And you can't forget things like that. And those sorts of comments,
yep,
just sort of get embedded and you can never forget it.
Yeah. I mean, the only motivation in, you know, trying to have these conversations with our parents, like it solely has to be about just saying this stuff for ourselves, you know, like regardless
right
whether or not the outcome is, you know?
Right.
So how is she, like, what would you say? She's like mentally ill? Like, how would you describe her?
I would say she's been suffering with depression as long as I can remember it. And I think that was one of the barriers to me even getting started down this path is, you know, those comments that my dad made when we were growing up that, you know, your mom is crazy and that, you know, she has to take medication and, you know, she's not healthy with her mental health. And it's sort of like, well, you know, looking back on it now, it's sort of like, neither were you. And, you know, to sort of use this as a point of judgment or as sort of a wedge between, you know, your kids and their parents or in wedging their opinions apart, you know, it just doesn't make a ton of sense. And it's, as I was sort of moving into the world of being independent, you know, trying to find a way that I didn't have to live with those kinds of comments, those kinds of judgments, those kinds of narratives going into the life that I want to live.
I never asked you about your father's death and how that impacted you.
It was pretty impactful. You know, I was 17. I was in high school at the time. And I think you know, the sort of quiet life that I was living by my, you know, living without really having people know what was going on in my own personal life. It was, you know, it was August 22nd when he passed. And then, you know,
what happened?
He had a heart attack. He had cancer from his time being exposed to chemicals in Vietnam. So he was in remission in his cancer, but then he ended up just, you know, one day didn't wake up. But, you know, Dad drank more than he should have. And then that probably, you know, contributed some of those things that were there. I think you would probably call him a covert alcoholic in the whole situation there. So, and I would probably put my mom in the same category.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if there was any alcoholism or addiction in the family.
I think that's definitely there. And that's, you know, one of the sort of areas of concern that you just have to watch for as a child of people in those circumstances.
Have you ever had any issues?
No. I mean, I shouldn't say no, but I would say that I think things were getting a little bit out of hand for a while. And my wife talked to me about that. And, you know, I think we had a bit of a reset. I ended up in 24, just being, I shouldn't say, no, 23. The years are sort of going together. I ended up in the hospital having a panic attack. And, you know, I think there was sort of the forced drying out that the doctor said to, you know, not consume anything for the next month because you know, we're trying to figure out what's going on with your heart. And, you know, I think that period of clarity sort of changed my relationship with consuming alcohol. I still have some now and again, but it's not for the same, purposes as it was before.
Yeah. Had you had many panic attacks, or was that a one?
No, this was sort of a one and done. And I think the big issue that was happening is at the end of 2023, you know, 2023, I traveled way too much for work. The dog was sick. My wife had an injury and was really having some complications from that. And I was on the road all the time. So it's sort of like, you know, you're being a shitty husband. You've got all these other things that are sort of coming to the forefront, and, you know, you try to medicate yourself in one way, and then everything sort of piles up, and it's sort of like you go to the hospital with chest pain thinking you're having a heart attack. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a bit of a wake up call for me that things really needed to change, because I didn't want to, you know, not wake up one day when I'm 46 years old.
And what about your wife? Does she come from a dysfunctional family?
There are some aspects that were there. I think our dads were very similar. You know, they both served in Vietnam. They both had their own sort of dynamics that they brought back with them. And I think, like a lot of men who came back from war service in the 70s, you know, it was sort of like, man up and deal with it. This is not something that you talk about. This isn't something that you get help on, and you figure out how to do it yourself, because if you don't, you're weak. And I think that's a really shitty construct to sort of approach your life through, where it's entirely arbitrary and placed on yourself, either from, you know, what you think air quote society says you should do, or what your military brotherhood is saying. But, you know, it leads to, you know, generations of screwed up kids.
I know. Well, I mean, think about how little they knew back then, too, you know?
Right, right. I think the guys coming back from Vietnam were the first ones who sort of started getting called PTSD, working through some of these things. And it seems like in some cases, some of the guys who were really in really, really bad shape got help. But the sort of run-of-the-mill people who experienced a lot of trauma and saw a lot of things that none of us would ever hope to see in our lives didn't get any help.
All right. So, three things you like about yourself.
I am loyal. I am intelligent, and I am capable.
We're doomed for the future.
Hope or dream for the future. I would say that, you know, being the best person I can be and getting to the point where every day is a day that you can find goodness in the world. Yeah.
holding on.